and more importantly, the implications that it has on how the language acquisition process actually works, what we can do to actually acquire a language, and, you know, many other things related to this topic. And yeah, so let's get into it. And I'll introduce Joel in a second, but as usual, feel free to leave your comments at any point, any questions you may have for us, anything that comes to your mind. Okay. So here he is. Hi, Joel.
Hello. Nice to see you again.
How are you doing?
I'm all right, thanks. Yes. Cool. Warmer than you.
That's for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm in negative Celsius, so okay. To give you an idea right now.
It's going to be a tough winter.
Okay. And yeah, before we get started, first I'll say hi to everyone in the chat. There's Graf. Do you understand that, Joel? Graf on Kartoffel. I guess it might be Ni Hao, which is hello, I hope. But anyway, Graf, welcome to the live streaming, first of all. Yeah. Hello. That's what I thought. Awesome. And yeah, hello, Adrian. I'm good. All good. And yeah, Adrian's from Argentina. Joel.
Okay. Nice to meet you.
Sorry. Oh, 1 second. Well, now can you hear me now? Yeah.
Yes, but the microphone changed.
Yeah, because I just touched the camera cable for a second. That all good, all good.
Okay.
Perfect. Right. Okay. So start. It means start. All right.
Yeah.
Perfect. Hi, Maddie. And yeah, hi, Tony, first of all. Welcome as well. Maddie from Ireland, welcome. And yeah, thank you. Nice to meet you too. Says Adrian. Reggie says hi. Hola. Perfect. And yeah, this is Ni Hao, I guess, right? Like, hello, Adrian and Joel. Awesome. Okay. So, well, welcome back, Joel, first of all. It's a pleasure to have you here again. And yeah, like, final reminder for everyone, you can leave your comments at any point. We'll look at them every now and then. And yeah, why don't you start with the easy one, Joel? What do you mean by grammar doesn't exist?
Okay. All right. Okay. So I did a video where I go into everything in more technical detail, mm-hmm. which is called Grammar Doesn't Exist. And if you're interested, if anybody's interested, you can check it out later.
I'll link it. Yeah.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. So, but maybe the basic concept is actually the analogy that I open with, which is that when you see a flock of birds in the sky, let's say a flock of geese flying in the sky, and you see that they are flying in a V formation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we call this a V formation. And to call it a V formation can be useful in some way, because when we go all around the world, we see birds flying in this formation when they migrate. And so it's useful to talk about a V formation sometimes. But is there actually a V? Does the V exist really?
Hmm.
So, in fact, there is no V in the sky. It's not that the birds see this V in the sky. They say, oh, there is a V in the sky. We must sit on this V. That's not what's happening. Something else is going on. You know, the birds have other motivations. They are all acting individually. But you have this kind of emergent dynamic, which is where they fly in a V formation. But the V doesn't have any independent existence.
Mm-hmm.
The V doesn't exist.
Yep.
And what I'm trying to point out is that grammar doesn't exist in the same way. So just like talking about the V formations, grammar is a way of talking about what we see going on in languages, and it can be useful.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not what the language itself is made of. The language itself is made of something else in our minds. We don't actually have a system, a symbolic system of ideal forms in our minds, which then, you know, words plug into. It's the other direction. It's bottom up. So that's the basic concept that I was trying to get across.
Yeah, like they didn't draw a bee in the sky, right? it's interesting, and I was thinking about it because we'll get into the implications of that when it comes to language acquisition in a moment. But I was thinking about it, and I remember a few years ago, I had a friend from India, and she was studying Spanish philology.
Okay.
And she would ask me questions because, you know, that's what she got, right, in college. She would ask me grammar questions like, when do you use this or why or things like that. And I remember that I had to think about it for a while. I had to think of several different examples of sentences that just came to my mind and somewhat make up some sort of rule on my own. But then there were going to be a lot of, exceptions. Sorry. So it was like I was just sort of making that up on the fly, you know, just getting that from different examples that I could think of in that moment. But then there's a lot of exceptions. I don't know. I just feel like that just sometime in the past, a group of people just decided to, you know, it's called, in Spain, it's called Real Academia Española. It's like the language academy, the Royal Language Academy, something like that. So they, you know, at some point they decided to just meet up and we're going to come up with some rules. I don't know with what purpose, you know, but yeah.
Yeah. Well, don't forget, there's also a philosophical tradition that treats abstract objects as real. And of course, I think probably most philosophical positions treat at least some kind of abstract object as real. This is very common. But for example, go all the way back to Plato and Socrates. They were always trying to find the essence of words and concepts.
Okay.
And so we have this idea of Platonic forms, right? So these are like these ideal forms, and all of the examples you see are a variation of this form, right? So with language, if all you're trying to do is learn a language and learn to speak a language, to use it in your life, then maybe you don't care so much. But if you are trying to do philosophy with language, and you're trying to say, well, look, we have mathematics, it's all wonderfully logical, but language is messy, and language shouldn't be messy because we have words for concepts and it should all be a grand logical system. If this is your perspective, then you are going to be biased to view language like that. And I think sometimes this kind of interacts with actual language pedagogy and language learning, thinking, in unhelpful ways sometimes.
Hmm.
If I could return to the V analogy. So when is it useful to talk about the V formation? Well, we ask, why do birds fly in a V? It's a good question, because they do. You know, there is a kind of V formation going on. And so on the surface level, when we are trying to talk about what we are seeing, yes, we can have this conversation. But what if you want to replicate what you are seeing? Let's say you want to paint a picture of a flock of migrating birds. If you say, birds fly in a V formation, so I will take my pencil and I will draw a very faint V, and I will draw the birds on this V, you will end up with an unnatural picture.
Hmm.
Or, for example, let's say you have a simulation of birds. If you program each bird to say, yes, we must fly in V formation, you will get an unnatural flock of birds. So because it's an emergent thing, if you want to replicate it, you have to go bottom up. So even if talking about it as a V, even if these grammatical concepts that we have, where we talk about what happens with language, even if they predict linguistic behavior perfectly, that still doesn't mean that that's what the language is made of deep down. So it's one thing to describe something and to predict what it will do next. It's another thing to actually try to replicate it. And as language learners, that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to replicate the linguistic system in our minds. And so, you know, it's very natural. It's a very normal thing, as you say, to think of this idea of learning grammar rules and applying grammar rules. But I think it's misguided to have this idea, for example, as a language teacher, okay, I will get my students and we will talk about this grammar rule and we will practice applying this rule and then it will become automatic. And then this is how we will learn the language. No, that's not how it works. But it's difficult to understand why that's not how it works. When you don't, haven't had the chance to do a dive, and that's kind of why I made this video. It's like I've explained the concept about this V formation thing, but what's the proof? What's the evidence for it? Why should we think like this? I mean, I go into a bit more of the reasons why I think this is true in the video, but I don't know. Just for now, maybe this is enough for this discussion.
Yeah, but I think I understand what you mean. Like there. They create, back to the birds example, they create the perfect natural V formation because they're not trying to create it.
Exactly.
But if you try to create it or you try to replicate it on the canvas, it's not going to be perfect. It's not going to be natural because you're forcing it in a way.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah. So how would you paint a realistic flock of birds? Well, go out there and watch birds, you know, what the flocks of birds flying by.
Right.
And then you ask yourself, you know, what would a natural flock of birds look like? You're not thinking about a V, you're not thinking about anything. Basically, you're drawing on the average of all your experiences of looking at flocks of birds migrating, and you paint that. And it's something similar with language. We have experience of the language, we experience the language being used, we get a feeling of what's normal, and then we do it. We don't think about grammar. And then what happens fits with this grammatical analysis, which is coming from the top down. But we didn't need that. You know, it's a different thing.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Well, like I say, it's one thing if it makes sense internally. That's great. But yeah. I am also an empiricist, right? It's like just because you have an elegant theory doesn't mean it has anything to do with reality.
Right. Yeah, we'll get into the implications of that when it comes to language acquisition in a moment. But first of all, let me say hi to Christine. How are you? Nice to see you here. Hi, Mateusz. Hi, Mataha. Okay, nice to see you. And yeah, Adrian. Yeah, exactly. You can ask in Spanish, Adrian. I'll translate it. No worries. If you prefer to do it in Spanish, I'll translate it. That works. Awesome. Oh, yeah. And Graf said Fogeln in F formation. Yeah.
Like there you go.
Birds. Right. Yeah. Awesome. So, yeah, I went to ask you because you mentioned that people have the idea that by talking, or teachers, that by talking about a specific grammar rule and then practicing over and over again, we think that's gonna make it automatic and we're gonna be able to actually communicate or use it. And there's something that I think you want to talk about that I've always been curious about, because, you know, we hear a lot of people talk about the fact that with language learning and other things, but they always use the analogy of sports or music, that you need to practice, right? That you need. And I always felt, for some reason, and maybe you can explain it in a better way, but for some reason, I always felt like it's not the same.
Yeah. Well, this was where how I started. So maybe 10 years ago, I experimented with a language teaching method, which was kind of mixed up with sign language, and there were some objects on the table, and we talk about the objects on the table. It's like immediately output, right? Input, output, you know, immediately we were talking using the language.
Mm-hmm.
Because it felt right, because if you think of language as a skill or as something like playing a sport, then you just get going, right?
Mm-hmm.
I play a bit, you play a bit, back and forth, you know, and then the language comes out. But this skill-building approach to language, it's been, there was a paper that came out 2 years ago by Bill Van Patten and Karen Lichtman,
mm-hmm.
called Was Krashen Right? You know, 40 years later. I think it was 40 years later. But if you search for Krashen 40 years and Van Patten or Lichtman, you'll find this paper very easily. And what this paper was saying was that this concept of comprehensible input is generally associated with Krashen. And Krashen is, he's not very popular in the second language acquisition community as a whole. There's mm-hmm. been a lot of criticism of his theories. But what they pointed out in that paper is that, in fact, the basic elements of what Krashen was saying all those years ago, they are still alive and well in second language acquisition research, but maybe under different names.
Mm-hmm.
So Krashen says comprehensible input. Others say meaning-based input. Others say communicatively embedded input. Mm-hmm. But no matter what you call it, it's a given in second language acquisition research that input is absolutely essential. And by input, we mean real life experience of the language being used. Nobody contests that input is absolutely necessary. Nobody. The debate is not, you know, input yes or input no. The debate is between input only and input plus, the way I like to talk about it. So, but the thing is that what's going on over there in SLA, there is a disconnect between what's going on over there and what's going on with schools,
mm-hmm.
also what's going on with solo language learners. There's a disconnect between these worlds. And there has to be a way to learn from each other. I say learn from each other. We have to, there has to be a harmony. And the harmony is that input is essential. So mm-hmm. It's language is not like learning to play a sport or learning to play a musical instrument. It's something very different. You get input and your brain builds a system. It's a different thing, and we've known it's a different thing for 40 years, but still we have this skill building approach that's very common among teachers and learners. But just knowing that that's the case, and the fact that all the researchers agree, it doesn't automatically make sense to a language learner. Because if I can connect it with what we were talking about before, you have this idea or you have this implication that when you pick up a textbook and it gives you a grammar rule, this is the language. And when you have a bilingual dictionary and it says this word is this word in the other language, it is that. It's like a code table or something.
Mm-hmm.
It's like this word is equal to that word in the other language.
Yep.
And you are left with this impression that language is basically an explicitly describable system. It's a system that we can describe explicitly. But for the last 40 years, second language acquisition research has known that you can't learn it explicitly. You can't acquire it explicitly.
Hmm.
You have to acquire it implicitly. And so there is this disconnect. It's like it doesn't make sense. And because it doesn't make sense, you end up with these blended methods where it's like, yes, I know we need to have input, but surely it's better if I explain the rule first and then I give you input that has the rule in it. This must be better, right? Right. So when you don't have a basis for why this should make sense at all, then you can get very confused very quickly.
Yeah, it's interesting because Yeah, it's like for some people thinking, because that's actually what I was thinking about. Like, first of all, like input, like there's no way to get it done without input, right? Like that's all we need, right? I mean, not all we need, like that's the most important thing. But then, yeah, there's so many ways to talk about that other part. Like, is it only input or is it input plus some output? Is practice output going to help you? Is it going to hurt you? Is it neutral? You know?
Exactly.
So it's always tough to make up your mind, right?
yeah, exactly. And you have to have a working theory. So it's like once I worked with a journalist as a translator.
Okay.
And he was like an old school investigative journalist. It was great fun to work with him. And he would never go out and just interview people. We would have a chat among ourselves, and we would try to work out what's going on. And we would say, okay, well, this afternoon we're going to visit this person, this official, this businessman, whatever. And we're trying to work out what's really going on. And so he would say to me, look, we must have a working theory.
Okay.
We must at least have an idea. So what is our working theory? Of course, you know, we don't know, but we guess that this is possible, this is possible, and that this is really what's going on. Okay, let's use this as our working theory. If our working theory is correct, then when we go and talk to this guy, what should he say? And we go into the interview with this question and this expectation. And then if the person reacts the way that we expect him to, then we say, aha, this supports our working theory, and we can continue. And if he says something that surprises us, then great, we go home and we think again. We build a new working theory. But you can't just walk in there and just ask random questions. And it's a little bit like that with what we're talking about here. Input, we need input. Yes, but why? What is your working theory?
Okay.
What is your working theory about how the brain is doing what it does? So this is why I think it's nice to just go into the subject a little bit. Is it a true symbolic system? Or is it pattern recognition? And what's the difference between a pattern and a rule-based system? If you understand that and you have this, okay, working theory is language acquisition is a kind of implicit learning, a kind of tacit learning, which is based on pattern recognition, just like with a neural network, with a training set. If that's your working theory, okay, great. Now go out and try that with your language and see how it goes.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, you're just trying random things. You see some YouTuber with this new idea, and of course, you know, it's a great spiel, you know, he talks great and it all looks good, and you think, oh, maybe I'll try that this time. You're just trying random things if you don't have a working theory.
And I guess that's your working theory, right? Like the pattern recognition.
Right. You know, maybe in some way it will turn out to be wrong. It's like right now, I'm not sure about this idea of universal grammar,
mm-hmm,
and innatism or nativism. So, of course, you know, in some special way, humans are good with language. This is uncontested. But the question is, do we have anything in the brain that is language specific?
Okay.
That's the question. So Chomsky, universal grammar, and, you know, generativists in general, they will say, yes, there are some structures in the brain. There is some kind of at least constraints that are specific to language and uniquely make language possible. It's like there is some kind of a language organ, in a way of speaking.
Yeah, yeah.
But on the other hand, if we can explain language acquisition purely by saying, look, we're smart, we have a good, very good pattern recognition qualities that we can use in many domains, not just language, and we have theory of mind, which is, you know, we are trying to get into each other's heads all the time in a way that animals generally don't.
Mm-hmm.
Right. If you can take those, and this is enough to explain everything we see with language, then why do we need universal grammar as a construct? So this is the interesting question for me right now. It's like, how far can we take this? Or is it maybe true that there are some restrictions on what is possible in a human language that is kind of hard-coded and is specific to language? Maybe, but especially with the breakthroughs with large language models and so on, it gives us a way to think that actually, you know what, maybe we don't need to have any specific, you know, language organ in some way.
That's super interesting. First of all, I got a question about that, but one moment.
Sure, go ahead.
Yeah, but it's like the bird example is excellent.
Vogelbeispiel. Vogelbeispiel, what's Vogelbeispiel?
It's the bird example.
Ah, okay, very good.
It's excellent. And yeah. I'm bread. Perfect. And yeah, Reggie said great paper about
It's freely available on ResearchGate. It's self-published on ResearchGate. You can go download it. It's a good read. It's worth reading.
Okay, perfect. And staying on this topic, Reggie asks, couldn't it be both, like both innate brain structures and pattern recognition?
Well, yes, but what the point I'm trying to make is a bit like Occam's razor. So if it's possible to account for language with pattern recognition alone, then what need do we have to suppose that there is also an innate brain structure at the same time?
Okay.
Yeah. So of course, you have to think of, and of course this comes back to the question of poverty of the stimulus, right? So the generativists will say that, oh, language is much too complicated for a child to pick up. You know, they get till only 2 or 3 years old and they're kids and they're just, they've got no idea what's going on, but somehow they're producing, you know, well-formed sentences, or at least they are using two-word phrases correctly. But that comes from a time where you are thinking that knowledge is either there or it isn't. And if you can't remember it, then it's gone. But of course, what we are now seeing with pattern recognition and such is that every experience of something leaves its mark in the mind. And if you're exposed to the same thing several times, then only after you recognize the pattern do you become consciously aware of it.
Okay.
So this is the kind of thing that we are talking about a lot now. Back when Chomsky was new and he was his main... rival was Skinner and behavioralism, it made sense to talk about the poverty of the stimulus. But now maybe not so much.
And what difference would it make? I mean, difference on a practical way on how you go about language acquisition, or what you do if you want to learn German or whatever the language.
Okay.
If you believe universal grammar is there, or that it exists, we actually have like a language organ, like you said, or whatever you want to call it. How would your approach change if that was the case, as opposed to pattern recognition?
Well, of course, it depends on which version of universal grammar we're talking about. The latest versions of the universal grammar concept are more to do with constraints and more like algorithmic thoughts about how words may be combined, like merge is one of Chomsky's more recent ideas. But of course, when you hear this expression universal grammar, and indeed in the earliest versions of universal grammar, the idea was is that basically it's like in our brains, we already have a concept of what a noun is, what a verb is, what a phrase is, and so on. So we have this skeleton already in the brain. And when we get input, then the skeleton gets fleshed out.
Okay.
But regardless of how much or how little you think is preloaded, still the basic concept is that you are dealing with a symbol system, like a system of an abstract system of ideal forms and structures that is expanded when you get input. So, of course, if universal grammar only means that, oh, well, there are some constraints in the brain such that some language forms are impossible, then that's a different question. That might not affect how you learn a language. But if you have it in your head that the basic categories of language are hard-coded, then it won't make sense to you that we have to learn through input implicitly, since it's this symbolic system that we can describe explicitly.
Yeah, I'm starting to think about it. And I mean, I don't know if it's exactly the same thing, but I was just thinking that if we didn't go through the school system, we probably wouldn't know what a noun is or a verb is. Right. I was just thinking about it as on the fly.
Yeah. And what you're saying, like, it's not just that we don't know what a noun is, what a verb is, and what these things are. It would be one thing if we had an instinct of what they are, but we just didn't know what they were called.
Right.
It's worse than that. Hmm. You know, like you said about the philologist. Yeah. Right. Why is it like this in Spanish? And you try to come up with an explanation, and your explanation is useless. It's like, it doesn't work. it's just a little tidbit. I mean, it doesn't necessarily mean anything 100% either way, but it makes you think. It's like, why is it so difficult for us to explicitly describe this system?
Yeah.
If what it is, you know, a logical symbolic system, you know, it makes you question it.
True. Yeah, like I said, I had to think of several different examples of that structure being used. And I completely made up the rule. Completely.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
So, one second, Adrián. For example, the RAE is the Real Academia Española, like the Language Academy in Spain. They use one word, one vocabulary word in the dictionary, but then we use other words in daily life.
Yeah, yeah. And this is, it's not just that words change with time. I think it's very interesting to see how the same word shifts in meaning in a very subtle way over time. Because everybody has a slightly different perception of this word. It's not digital. It's not all or nothing. It's not that everybody has identified exactly the same truth about this word. True. Everybody has a slightly different version of the meaning in their heads. And with each new generation, this word shifts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, actually, I was just thinking, even in a short period of time, like I was just listening to a podcast yesterday, I think. There's an American entrepreneur. His name is Gary Vaynerchuk. I really like him for a little bit. But he was talking about the fact that he used the word hustle in 2008, 2009, because we were coming out of the recession and he thought that was necessary. But pretty soon people started to think of hustle as, you know, burnout. So he started using work ethic instead.
Yeah. Okay.
So it's just like the word hustle, like change in a couple of years, it changed from a positive, you know, even as gracious from a positive meaning to a negative one.
Yes.
Right. And we're talking 2-3 years, not just all the time. Like,
Yeah.
And Adrián went to ask, what do we need to learn? Right.
Right. So
if there's one thing in the academics and another one that people really use on a daily life, what do we need to learn? We need to listen to the language, right?
Right, yes. So I'll give what really made me think about this is how neural networks work. So of course, a neural network is an abstract system in a computer. There's, you know, this doesn't prove anything, but it gives you an idea. It's like maybe this is how it could be. And you look at how they work. For example, if you wanted to recognize handwritten numbers, this is the original example from the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
So if I draw a number 8 and you draw a number 8, they're going to look a little bit different. And so what they do is they get thousands of examples and they set up a neural network. And the input is all the pixels of this image of the hand-drawn number. And the output is basically 10 outputs from 0 to 9. And you show it let's say I drew an eight. I show it that I drew an eight, and I say, what's this? I just run it through the system, and the output, maybe let's say number four is very bright, number eight is very dim. All you do is you go through the network and you take all of the connections that supported the wrong answer and you weaken them. You take all the connections that supported the correct answer, you strengthen them. You do this thousands of times, and then the system starts to get it right.
Hmm.
But you open it up and you look inside and you can't find any kind of symbol. It's like the whole thing. Hmm. Learned the whole thing at the same time.
Right.
Like one corner of the neural network that recognizes that, you know, this bit at the top of an eight is a loop at the top.
Right.
With a four, you have a straight line, and there's another part of the system that recognizes that. It's like the whole thing knows everything at the same time. And what's also interesting is that every single time you run the experiment, the values of the connections are going to be completely different every time, because you're starting with different random values. So the point is not so much that there is like one true version of the language that native speakers have in their heads, and it's identical for all native speakers, and we must try to get to that. It's not like that. All native speakers have solved the problem of their native language in a different way. But the point is that they got enough exposure until they could recognize the patterns in the language and reproduce the patterns of the language often enough so that very rarely they have a brain fart and other people don't understand them.
Right.
And that's what we're doing as language learners. It's the same process. We are exposing ourselves to the patterns of the language in a meaningful way.
Right.
And our brain builds its own representation that helps us to understand and be understood.
Right.
If it works, it works.
So long story short, we need input. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah. Yeah, but I understand that with the number example, you're talking about number eight, for example.
Yeah.
It's not that an ideal way of drawing a number eight, is that from all the examples that it's seen over, you know, the experiments or the years, you realize that's an eight.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm just thinking about the difference between a four and a nine, that sometimes if the person draw, you know, it's not really clear, you can be confused. But that's the little brain fart that you were talking about. For the most part, you recognize a four and a nine perfectly.
Yeah. And but these systems never reach 100% accuracy. But to be perfectly honest, do humans. If I ask you to identify 10,000 handwritten numbers, will you get 100%? I'm not sure.
No. No way.
No.
Yeah. Mm. I like that. Yeah. True. So it's not
an idea.
It's great, because there's not an ideal scenario. There's not an ideal way of communicating that we were striving for, right? Mm-hmm. It's just.
So. Your brain picks up on the patterns that when there is this meaning, when the person is trying to say this, they use this word. You spot this pattern. This is an eight.
And the great thing is you spot it without being aware of it.
Right.
Exactly. Which to me is excellent news, because otherwise you'd be, you know, you'd be overpowered all the time.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. And this, sorry, just to circle back. Again, this helps to explain why Krashen says things like learning cannot become acquisition.
Hmm.
So you have this grammar rule, you practice the rule, and you try to spot the rule when other people are using it. It's like, no, this is a different thing.
Right.
When you have this kind of working theory that basically we pick up the patterns of language a lot like a neural network, then you have a way for it to make sense. That what you learn about the language is one thing, and actually acquiring it is a different thing, because it's a different system with a different logic.
Right. Yeah, it's like if someone says, I'm going home, you're not spotting, I am going, no, you're hearing, I'm going home, and you see how that person is going home.
Right.
So you make the connection without being aware of it, right?
And I'll tell you something, it's really interesting that you say that. A mistake that Turks will often make when they're learning English is they will say, I am going to home.
Right.
If I'm going home. I think maybe it's not just Turks. I think maybe this is common.
Yeah.
Because, well, I'm going to the home. Sometimes they'll say, I'm going to the home, or I'm going to home. And why? Because they're trying to apply a rule.
Hmm.
As a native English speaker, you have to point this out to me. Isn't it strange how you go to the shops, you go to school, but you go home? Isn't that strange? And you say, oh, yeah, I suppose it is strange. Again, because that's not how it's working, right?
Yeah, and I'm sure there are 1,000 examples with every language.
Yeah.
Cool. So before I ask you about your Tokipona project, I want some update on it. Brett says the word grammar has two meanings. Grammar in the deep sense causes native speakers to say things a certain way. But the rules we teach, which we also call grammar, are not the same thing.
Exactly. So this is the same point using different words. And what I'm saying also is that it's not just native speakers. It's anybody who acquires a language. So, of course, maybe you know about it, and also the others who are with us. There is this approach called automatic language growth, mm-hmm. ALG. And they help adults to acquire language with no abstract knowledge at all. They tell them nothing about the language. And they actually tell them, don't think, you know, don't try to analyze the language. Just don't do it. Just allow your brain to do the work and just focus on understanding what you are being told. And after a few hundred hours, it works. And so this is, in a way, it's funny, it hasn't been researched more, but these days more and more you can find people online who are using this method. Dreaming Spanish is a wonderful example of this.
Mm-hmm.
Go onto Reddit, go onto Dreaming Spanish and read all the posts of people who said, oh, I finished 500 hours, I finished 1,000 hours. You know, people are trying this for themselves and they're seeing that it works. So this grammar in the deep sense causes native speakers to say things a certain way, but it's what also causes those adults who are using ALG to say things in the way that they do. There's no other explanation for how they can do that, because they have no knowledge. They have no analysis of the language.
Yeah.
And then the rules that we teach, right, exactly. It's like that's top down rather than bottom up. It's mm-hmm. like a top down rationalization. And the point that I think I'm trying to make is that, yes, when you you learn this grammar, it can be useful in some ways, and especially when you are dealing with a school system. Especially when you are dealing with a school system. Yeah, maybe you have to do that. Also, if you are trying to communicate on day one and you don't have time to have lots of input and have some pattern recognition go on until it starts to happen naturally, if you don't have time for that, then grammar is a quick and easy way to make yourself understood.
Right.
Not the real thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, in school, you need it to pass a test, but that doesn't mean you can actually use the language, right?
No.
Of course, yeah. Yeah, I'm also thinking that first grammar he's talking about, that is what I was talking about with my friend, the example of my friend. Like, it's an aftermath. It's something I came up with, you know, somehow. But it doesn't mean it's there. Or it certainly wasn't there when I learned the language, obviously. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. So Reddy says, it would explain the rarity of human-like speech within animal kingdom.
Right. So I think this is about universal grammar.
Yeah. He says some animals have highly developed forms of pattern recognition. Yeah.
Yes. No, of course they do. Of course they do. But what I'm saying is it's no longer a slam dunk. Right. So what we can see that this pattern recognition is more powerful than we thought in the past, for humans as well as animals. So what is it about humans that makes us use language? If it's possible for us to pick up all of the patterns of a language through pattern recognition alone, then, of course, yes. Why us and not animals? Well, maybe the difference is that we uniquely want to get inside each other's heads. Theory of mind. So we are unique in the way that we are trying to really understand each other. So it's like with these trials they did where they tried to teach apes sign language. You know this one, like bonobos, right? And so I read the Wikipedia page about it and I checked it out and it's true. What's very interesting is that these bonobos, they never ask questions. So they got them to the point where a bonobo could understand this grammar in a sentence. So they would tell the bonobo, it's like, make the snake bite the car or something. And it picks up the snake and it makes it bite the car. But it would never ask a question. It never says, where are you going? It doesn't ask questions. So maybe there's something special about the way humans try to understand each other that accounts for why we use language and animals don't.
Right.
If that alone is enough, then we don't need this extra construct of universal grammar. That's the point I'm trying to make. And it's all a, you know, It's an open question in my mind. I'm not saying that universal grammar is definitely wrong. But
Right. Yeah. Adrian,
great comments.
But how are the grammar patterns built or formatted in the brain?
I really recommend that you look at my video, Grammar Doesn't Exist, because I explain a little bit more. But basically, the big revelation for me is that thanks to neural networks, not just ChatGPT, but all the neural networks before, that the whole area of connectionism is telling us that it's possible to have patterns without rules. So you would think that recognizing a pattern is basically identifying a rule. So how do you recognize a number 8? Well, if you have a loop at the top and you have a loop at the bottom, then you have a number 8. So this would be a rule system, right? Mm-hmm. And in the past, I didn't have any other way of thinking about this, but you can have patterns without rules. All you need is the average of all the examples that you've seen, such that it's reliable enough to use, and that's it. So pattern recognition doesn't have to be anything more than that. But, you know, it sounds like a crazy idea, so I recommend you watch that. If you don't have time for all of it, then maybe the first bit is enough, because I also use another YouTuber's videos. 3Blue1Brown talks about neural networks. If you just get that concept, I think it will help.
Right. Perfect. Okay. Reggie, it's interesting how much more data input artificial neural networks compared to our own, like ChatGPT, need in order to function as well as they do currently.
That's correct. Mm-hmm. And what's really interesting to my mind is that I explain in the video as well, ChatGPT is trained on only text. Mm-hmm. So ChatGPT only gets text. It has no context.
Right.
It has no emotions, no images, nothing. All it has is statistical probabilities that this word will come after this word, or this word, if this word is in the first paragraph, how likely is it that this word will be used in the last paragraph, right? All it has is pure, you know, stochastic inference. That's all it has.
Yep.
So the input it needs, yes, it needs a lot of input. It needs more content on the internet than you can ever read in your life. But it's a very poor quality of input. What do we get? We get these linguistic forms at the same time as we experience our emotions, everything around us, and we're trying to understand each other. We're trying to read each other's minds. So again, I don't see that you can say, well, ChatGPT needs all this input. And we don't have time for all this input, so we need something in addition to input. This argument doesn't work for that reason. I mean, it doesn't work immediately. I'm just saying there is a counter argument.
Right. Yeah, there's no like feelings, there's no context, there's no objects.
Right.
True.
Yeah. It's amazing that it can do as much as it can with input that is so poor, really.
Right. It's weird and only. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'll go with you, Adrian, in a second. So maybe there's something to that. Dolphins have something approaching a human-like theory of mind. They can recognize the reflection in the mirror as their own, and they refer to one another by name.
Mm-hmm.
And evidently, have a complex language-like system of communication as well, evidently.
Yeah. I think it'd be very interesting to, I mean, it would be very expensive, so I don't think anybody will do it just yet, but it would be very interesting to take a neural network like ChatGPT and make it watch dolphins and see what they do when they make these noises to each other, and maybe it would work it out. I don't know.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I have no... There's nothing I can say about dolphins. So.
I don't know either.
I'll be making that up. Yeah. Okay, perfect. And Adrian says, through listening and more, I'm right asking... One second. Oh, yeah, no, he's asking that if only... One second,
yeah, no problem.
Yeah, like why vocabularies don't work, and it's only through listening that we trigger acquisition. Or that, yeah.
Right. So when we talk about a vocabulary list, what is a vocabulary list? Right. It's like saying, like for to use Turkish as an example, it's saying that elma is apple and armut is pear and portakal is orange and so on. So what are we doing there? We're taking, you know, in my case, English, the language I already have that I've acquired, and I am taking one word in the target language and I'm attaching it to English. It's not acquisition. Acquisition is hearing the word elma in the context when somebody is talking about apples.
Yeah.
And I realize, yes, they are talking about the apples. And my brain, it has a small impact the first time. And then after a few more times, it's like, yes, every time apples are being talked about, the word elma is used.
Mm-hmm.
Its pattern is recognized. So vocabulary list, it's a fundamentally different thing.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, it's just sort of an artificial attempt. Just like the whole traditional approach, I would say, of trying to learn a language.
Look, if you want to survive for 2 days in a country and you have a vocabulary list of 20 words and you memorize these 20 words, it will help.
Right.
But there's an expression that Bill Van Patten uses, which is language-like behavior. So you are behaving as if you learned this language. Right.
Yeah, it would be awkward, like, you know,
yeah,
a station, you know, like how,
yeah, it's a language.
Exactly. It's you're trying to survive, so that makes sense. But I'd say just an artificial way of trying to hack the process in a way, it's not how we acquire languages. Right?
But even then, it's like, okay, I like the refold people. It's an interesting idea and probably a good idea when you don't have any content that's at the beginner level and you have this gap between zero and intermediate, then sure, maybe memorizing some words will make it faster for you to understand the input that you get.
Right.
But again, what you memorized is not going towards acquisition. What you memorized is going towards understanding the communication. And then the linguistic forms during the communication are what goes towards.
Right.
Yeah.
But it's a way to access input that wouldn't be comprehensible without it.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Yes. But it's a stepping stone to what you really need.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
True. Okay. And I also wanted to ask you about your, because for everyone who doesn't know you, you've been experimenting, you could say, on your channel with a conlang called Tokipona. You've been like trying to teach them. Well, you can tell us more about it.
Yeah. So especially during the pandemic, I got very interested in this subject of language acquisition. And I found ALG that I mentioned before, automatic language growth. And I had this feeling that it makes a lot of sense. ALG, you know, the more I read about it, the more it made sense. But it's all the way over here. It's like you have mainstream researchers and what they are doing, because they're mostly dealing with classroom environments and short-term studies and the like. And then you have the whole school system, and they are doing things like TPRS, maybe. And then you have solo language learners, and they're all doing completely different things. And then you've got ALG over here. And it feels like it makes a lot of sense. But it's one thing to say that overall it's more efficient. It's like Thai. After 800, 900 hours, you are basically at intermediate Thai. If you have that amount of hours in the classroom with a normal classroom, you won't be at that level.
Right.
Even if you can prove it, though, on day one, you have nothing to show for it. Like after 10, 20, 30 hours of input, you feel something's happening, but it's still a slow process. And mm-hmm. So for somebody to trust this process, they need to have something a little bit more. So what can I do? I said to myself, well, I'm not an academic. I have a day job. But maybe what I can do is give you a personal experience, like a taster. And so there's this constructed language called Tokipona. And it has a vocabulary in the minimal form of only 120 words. And so for me, it's a very interesting little kind of, you know, sandbox. It's like you can play around with it and try different things with language and information theory and other things. But in this case, what I did is I made a video course, which is like story listening. So I'm drawing pictures so you can understand what I'm saying. But at the same time, I'm speaking Tokipona. So I did a series of 30 videos, 20 minutes each. And so in total, it's 10 hours.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, 20 minutes a day for a month, you know, it's not terrible. If you're thinking about ALG and you're thinking, well, what would that be like? And is my brain up to it? Would that really work? You know,
right.
Try this. And yeah, I've done a podcast where I've interviewed 12 people who have watched all the videos. Some of them had some knowledge of Tokipona up front.
Okay.
Some of them only watched my videos. And for sure, 10 hours is not enough to get you to proficiency in Tokipona at all. But it is enough to experience the process happening in your mind. And it is enough to have a kind of basic conversation. And that's the point. You get that experience. It's like, yes, it does work. I can take that and I can sit through 800 hours of whatever languages I'm learning. And I know it's going to work because I experienced it. That's the
idea. Right. So, yeah, I understand. Because actually, I started watching this might be interesting as well, because I started watching those lessons. And I don't know, after 13th, 14th, it has nothing to do with your classes. They were great. But I realized that I was having a hard time going on because I thought about it afterwards. Like,
okay,
it wasn't the language I was going to use.
Right.
So, you know, now that I'm learning German, especially, but Russian as well, I know my ultimate goal is to be able to communicate in the language, or at least be able to understand native resources and videos and so I started thinking, like, why was it that hard for me to keep on going again? Because it had nothing to do with your video.
It's fine.
And actually
it's fine. It's okay.
I saw that you found people for the interview, so I was like, oh, okay.
You're very kind. Thank you for trying. But again, from your perspective, it's not that it wasn't working, right? It's just motivation.
Yeah, no, it was comprehensible, which is what you need. And actually, that's the approach I use now that I'm learning German. I've talked about it, but for a couple of years, I started listening and watching 20 minutes of German a day.
Yeah.
Comprehensible. There are some channels on YouTube where they create, you know, comprehensible videos. So it was always comprehensible because that's key. And after 2.5 years, in September, I started an experiment of getting exposed to the language for three hours a day.
Okay.
Just listening and reading sometimes, depending on the resource.
Yeah.
But I've been doing it for 3 months now. And first of all, my ability to understand is just way higher than it was.
Yeah.
which is a good sign, first of all, because again, my output is not there yet.
No.
So back to your point, sometimes you may need that sort of leap of faith, right? That
yeah.
you say, okay, I hope this is going to happen, you know. But I think there are certain ways to realize that, okay, it is actually working. Like, I can understand way more than I could before. And mm. I start, it's like you start building sentences in your head, or you start thinking in the language, or I don't know, you start sort of, without you even consciously controlling that, you start, I do it all the time. Like, you start, so I'm listening to a podcast in whatever language. So in my head, I imagine if I was a guest on that podcast, I would say this and that in the language, but I don't think about it. It happens in my head. So after 10 minutes, I realized, okay, I've been speaking the language in my head as if I was the guest on that podcast. It sounds weird, but...
No, I get it. No, I get it. And this is the thing. It's like, you don't need this. You don't need my thing.
Right.
I think that what I was really going for is people who have no background at all with that like, comprehensible input is a totally new idea. And maybe they're open to something new, but... spending hundreds of hours, it's like I need to be sure it will work before right. I spend so much time, you know.
Exactly.
Just a question though. So when you were watching my videos, did you feel that it was getting easier to understand as you went?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. That's good.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Good.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah. But thank you very much for giving it a go. I appreciate that.
No, anything related to languages is just, it's a pleasure to me. And yeah. All right. Adrian says, sorry, because I read my questions bad in English. No worries, Adrian. Yeah. Very comprehensible. Yeah. We're talking about comprehensible input, so exactly. It's
yeah,
that's perfect, Adrian. Okay, so that's been your takeaway from your interviews, right? Like they can have a little conversation, right? We do like simple things, but it just obviously it's not enough.
No,
we're talking about hundreds of hours, not 10.
Yes,
requiring language, even sure. if it's that simple, right?
Well, they see that you say that it's interesting. I am. Hoping to do a sequel. I'm preparing to do a sequel. Now, of course, I don't have that much time on my hands, so it will take me maybe 2 years to complete. But I'm hoping to do a combination of story listening and crosstalk.
Okay.
So I have a guest, and I tell the story to the guest, and the guest reacts in English.
Hmm.
So there's an interaction going on. It's a genuine interaction. And so maybe it's more interesting to watch.
Right.
And so with time, I'm hoping that we will be able to get it up to like 50 hours of comprehensible input in Tokipona.
Right.
And I'm wondering if 50 hours might be the magic number for Tokipona. I don't know. But again, this is something that came up very recently in my circle of friends. There's this idea that output emerges naturally when you get enough input. And it's important to point out there that nobody, not Krashen, not J. Marvin Brown, not ALG, nobody is saying that you will be silent and then suddenly you will start speaking like a native. No. You start with individual words. And then two-word combinations, then phrases, then sentences, and this all keeps happening. This gradual advancement. The more input that you get. So, like what you were saying about German, exactly. That's how it happens. Yeah. You know, you get more and more input, and then you find that you are spontaneously forming more and more complex phrases in your head.
Exactly. Yeah, that can be, I was going to say the frustrating part sometimes, but that could be the thing that may scare people if they're not convinced by it, because, you know, when you start communicating, you use, like you said, one word, two words, and like really simple things. And we've talked about it many times that the frustrating part for us adults is we know the idea we want to communicate.
Yes.
And we have a way to do it in our native language or other languages, sure. But in the one we're trying to use in that moment, we can't.
Yeah. So
it's frustrating because you have the idea, but you don't have the tools to actually use it.
It's true.
Right?
It's true.
But I think it's important what you said, because yeah. Sometimes people have the idea that it's just going to happen overnight.
Yeah. No. And also the output won't happen overnight either, this automatic output. It comes together gradually.
Exactly.
Grammar, if you have no pressure in your life, and you have the time. So if you're setting out to learn a language, let's say you're saying that, in 2 years, I would like to move to this country.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not in that country yet. Perfect. Then go and find input in that language. Just keep using that input. It's difficult to find comprehensible input sometimes, especially at the beginning levels.
Right.
But don't worry about it too much. You don't have to understand everything blow by blow. Just have enough of an idea of what's going on, and it will help. And then you can just do that for 2 years. I mean, if you can do, let's say, 1 hour a day for 2 years, well, that's 600, 700 hours, isn't it? Before you go to this country. And by the time you go to that country, then you will already have some words and phrases.
Right.
But if you are under pressure and you are going next month, or you have an exam, or you have to teach, and you have a curriculum, and the parents have expectations, and the kids mm-hmm. have expectations, then you have to manage this as best you can.
Right.
But the point is not that, okay, this is what you must do, this is the holy path of of language learning, and you must not stray from this. It's like,
right.
But you have to know what you are doing, and you have to know how it's working. So, like what we were saying about vocabulary lists, it's like to survive on day one in a country, yeah, memorize some words, why not? But when you understand what's going on, and you understand that you need hundreds of hours of comprehensible input before this automatic output even like starts, really, then you won't get frustrated with yourself.
Yeah.
It's like, I practiced this word 10 times and I still can't remember it when I need it. No, nobody can.
Mm-hmm. Nobody.
This grammar rule, it makes so much, it doesn't make sense to me. Like Turkish sentences are backwards compared to English. My brain hurts. When will it stop hurting? It's like, it never will. And it won't, doesn't need to. One day it will be there when you need it, and you won't really understand how. Just keep going until you get there. So if you understand what's really going on, then no matter what the scenario and no matter what you have to do to survive, you will have less frustration.
Yeah, that's what kills you. That is the expectation of that being what's going to help you acquire the language when it's not. Yeah. Like you said, it can serve you for a short period of time. But
yeah.
I always use the example of the first time I came to Poland. I used to, because I didn't know about all this, so I used to do what most people do, like, how do you say this or that in Polish? My friends would tell me, like native speakers, 5 minutes later, not a day, not a week, no. 5 minutes later, I've forgotten the word.
Five minutes. Exactly.
And it happened to everyone. At least, it's not just me, but
Yes.
But at the time, I knew nothing about this. I was like, what the hell is going on? Like, why is that possible? Like, they just told me the word, and 5 minutes later, it was gone.
How am I ever going to learn this language if I can't remember one silly phrase after 5 minutes?
Right.
This is the feeling you get. I experienced this myself.
Yeah.
And this is really what this is all about.
Yeah.
That's why we have these conversations. It's because, right. It's a shame. And again, you have things like, I don't know if you noticed this video by Lamont. What's he calling himself now? Days and Words. He did this video about Duolingo.
Okay.
And, you know, if like Duolingo, maybe it's good if you have to memorize something to survive, right? You know, maybe it works. I don't know.
Yeah.
But people say, well, I've been doing Duolingo all this time, and then I went to the country and I couldn't understand anybody, and I didn't know how to speak to them. Maybe I'm no good at languages.
Mm.
That's not fair. It should never happen.
Yeah, that's the scary part. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And
exactly. This is why we're talking about it. Like, if you understand that it's normal that you can communicate after Duolingo, or that it's normal that you can remember the word 5 minutes later.
Yeah.
If you go about it that way, it takes a lot of pressure off of your shoulders.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You stop thinking that it's your fault. And that's one of my main goals as well. Like,
yeah. And again, you know, you have this idea of comprehensible input. If just pure comprehensible input, I have had some reactions to my videos even. It's like, you know, I watched your video and then you said something and I didn't know what you meant, so I clicked away. It's like, okay, but you know, the overall story, did you follow the overall story? Could you work out what was going on? Yes. Okay, well, then it's comprehensible input then. Right. Yeah, but I'm at the end of video one or video two, and I can't remember any Tokipona words. Like, it's like, I forgot everything. It's like, no, just keep going and you will experience it. But right. You have to experience it. Hmm. Otherwise, it feels like it's, you know, it's not going to work. It's very difficult to believe that it's going to work until you experience it personally.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been wanting to talk about that specific topic that I think is one of the things that gets the most in the way. Like, people trying to remember the actual words.
Mm.
Like, you might be in a class, like a comprehensible input in the class or watching the video, like enjoying yourself. But because you have the expectation that after listening to it, you should, that's the word, that's the keyword, you should
good.
Be able to use it, even if what you're doing is working, because you're doing the right thing, frustration is going to kill you.
Yeah.
Because you have that expectation that you should when...
Yeah.
No.
Exactly. It's crushing. Yeah. It's crushing, it's soul destroying.
Yep.
I consider myself quite fortunate that I had a situation where, you know, I was in extended contact with Turkish and Arabic, the languages that I know. I had this extended contact with these languages such that, you know, even if I'm frustrated and even if I'm thinking to myself, well, how am I ever going to remember these words? Because I was continuing with it anyway, in the end, I learned these languages.
Right.
So I'm fortunate that I had that. When you have somebody who's maybe sitting at home and they're thinking, oh, you know, maybe one day I would like to move to this country, and right now they're not using the language, and if they lose their motivation, everything ends.
Yeah.
That's a very kind of fragile process.
True.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm thinking maybe one day we can do a part three and talk about how you learn Turkish and Arabic. Because
yeah,
those are not the usual languages, you know, that we learn in, you know, in West or like Europe or America and so on.
Yeah. So we'll see. Why not? Yeah.
That could be interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, that was fun. I don't see any other questions here.
Yeah.
I don't know if anybody else has any question. If not, I think we can wrap it up here.
Yeah. Thanks to everyone who had comments. That was great. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Yeah. They always have great comments. I love that.
Great. Yeah, cool.
And awesome. Happy you enjoyed it, Reggie. That's what we're trying to do here. thank you, Joel, again.
A pleasure.
It was a pleasure to be, you know, to have you here for the second time. And Yeah, we'll think about the part three to talk about Arabic and Turkish.
All right, we'll see.
Those are interesting
languages. That's true.
Okay, so yeah, I don't see any comments, any questions. So thank you, everyone, like he said, for your questions, for being here. To everyone who watched the video afterwards, thank you as well. And yeah, I'll see you. One second. Adrian says that I asked something else.
Okay.
One second. Vocabulary list now.
We talked about that.
I think we talked about everything, Adrian. The grammar. Yeah, vocabulary.
You can write again, you know, why not?
Okay. Yeah, is there any specific question that you have, Adrian? Because I think we answer all your questions. If you go through the video again, I think we did. But if you have any specific question now, Adrian, I guess that's a thank you.
Yeah, cool.
Thank you. Back to context, I guess that's thank you, right? All right. So, yeah, Adrian, I think if you go through the video again, you'll see all the, like, I think we answer all your questions. If still you have some questions, you can actually write to me, like, send me an email or whatever, and we'll be happy to help you. I can do it in Spanish if that's easier. Or, yeah, I can even ask Joel to, yeah. Right. And says, your Chinese is getting good.
It was a guess.
Oh, yeah. Adrian asks if, with Chinese, if you think it's enough just with the natural approach.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So, very briefly, I mean, obviously, we have somebody here who clearly speaks Chinese, so I don't want to speak out of turn. But based on what I know so far, the spoken language, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
all spoken languages are the same, but written languages are artificial in a way.
Right.
So even when you have the written form of a spoken language that is phonetic, even then, because it's used in different contexts, it will have a slightly different flavor to it. With Chinese, the Chinese characters have such a richness to them. They have a life of their own.
Hmm.
So how to deal with Chinese characters? I mean, that's a very, that's a big question that's specific to Chinese.
Right.
So the question is actually a good one because there is clearly a special case with Chinese, but this natural approach is just like with any language.
Okay. Yeah, I think he said Chinese because we were just talking about that specific word.
Okay. But
he probably means like some kind of completely different. I mean, the same way it worked for you with Arabic, right?
Hmm.
Like the oral part, it's just another language, right?
Yeah, very different. Very, very different.
Right. Yeah, no, what I mean is that they're very different, but
yeah,
you know, by listening to the language and by understanding what people mean, what videos mean, you're going to acquire it the same way you would French, Spanish, English.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, the written part is different animal. But yeah. Okay.
Super.
So yeah, thank you, Joel, again. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you. Like I said.
And yeah, I'll see you next week, everyone. And yeah, wish everyone a good week.
Take care.
Bye-bye.